Welcome everyone to What the Higgs is Going On, a discussion of today's announcement from CERN on the search for the Higgs boson. Welcome to those of you in the room and to everyone watching online from around the world. We're streaming live from Perimeter Institute for Theoretical Physics in Waterloo, Ontario, Canada, and I'm Damien Pope, Senior Manager of Educational Outreach at Perimeter. The question, what is the universe made of, is one of the deepest, most fundamental questions humans have asked through the ages. Today is an exciting day in the quest to answer it. For the past 20 years, thousands of scientists and engineers have been working on the Large Hadron Collider, or LHC, experiment at CERN. Located just outside Geneva on the Swiss-French border, it's a 27-kilometer-long underground tunnel that accelerates protons to almost the speed of light and smashes them together in an effort to unlock mysteries about the subatomic world. One of the particles it's looking for is the Higgs boson, the particle thought to give other particles their mass. It's also the last undiscovered building block of our current model of the subatomic world and the universe. Scientists have been searching it for around half a century. Today, CERN announced that they'd seen hints of the Higgs boson. We're going to discuss just what was said and what it means. In short, what the Higgs is going on. To help us, we have a panel of three expert researchers. On my far right, we have Philip Schuster. Philip is a faculty member at Perimeter Institute in Particle Physics. He did his graduate studies at Harvard University and then was a research associate at the Stanford Linear Accelerator before coming to Perimeter in 2010. His research spans a wide range of areas in particle physics, includes, amongst other things, trying to understand the nature of dark matter and the origin of the weak force and what lies beyond the Standard Model. Much of his current research is directly related to the LHC, including searching for new weakly interacting forces. To his left is Natalia Toro. Natalia is also a faculty member at Perimeter Institute in particle physics. She undertook her graduate studies at Harvard University and afterwards was a postdoctoral researcher at Stanford from 2008 to 2010, before coming to Perimeter Institute last year. Her research focuses on physics beyond the Standard Model, and amongst other things, she is interested in how the LHC can search for new physics as broadly as possible. She's also interested in the nature of dark matter, the hierarchy problem, and searching for new short-range forces. And to my left here, on my right, we have Andy Haas. Andy is an assistant professor in the physics department at New York University. He did his graduate studies at Washington, University of Washington, before undertaking research positions at Columbia University and the Stanford Linear Accelerator. He is an experimental particle physicist who is a member of both the D0 experiment at CERN and the ATLAS experiment. Sorry, the D0 experiment at Fermilab and the ATLAS experiment at CERN. One of his main focuses is on interpreting data from the LHC. He is interested in discovering new physics beyond the Standard Model and was involved in D0's search for the Higgs boson for a number of years. So we had the really, really big announcement this morning from CERN, and we'd like to kind of dissect that and discuss that. But just to kind of back up and take a deep breath, what actually is the LHC, the Large Hadron Collider, and how does it work?
Yeah, it's definitely been an exciting day for particle physics. What is the LHC? Well, it's quite simply the biggest particle accelerator that's ever been built. Like you said, it's located in Geneva, Switzerland, at the laboratory CERN, which is an international particle physics laboratory. And over 10,000 people work there. It's funded by governments from all over the world. And then there's these two experiments there that analyze the data from the LHC. Each of them has over 3,000 people working on it, including myself. So I work on ATLAS, and then there's also CMS. How the LHC works, it's a particle accelerator. So how does a particle accelerator work? Well, the basic idea, at least for these kind of particle accelerators, is you need to first keep the particles going around in a circle. And to do that, you use magnetic fields. So you can try this at home, maybe get some wire and a battery and make an electric current, put a magnet up next to it, and you should, if you've done it right, see the wire move a little bit when you put up the magnet to it, and it goes perpendicular to the direction of the magnetic field. So that's the whole trick to building the particle accelerator. You keep the particles going around in a circle underground using very strong magnetic fields. So to do that, the LHC is using over 1,200 superconducting magnets that are some of the strongest magnets in the world. And that ring, like you said, is 27 kilometers around. Then as the particles are going around in a circle, you accelerate them. So each time they come around, you give them a little kick of energy. And slowly they go faster and faster and faster until after a few minutes, they're going almost the speed of light. In fact, I have the figure here. It's 99.999999% of the speed of light, which is very close, or an energy of 7 TeV, which means that each proton, which is in one of these bunches of protons that is in the accelerator, has the energy of about a mosquito flying at a few kilometers a second. So it's like a mosquito collider. These bunches of protons are then made to collide with each other, and there's about 100 billion protons in each bunch that are made to collide at the center of each of these experiments, ATLAS and CMS. When those proton bunches collide, you get about 20 collisions on average of protons, out of which thousands of particles come flying out. And then our job as experimentalists is to reconstruct each of these collisions as carefully as possible to understand what the Higgs was going on in each event, which is difficult because, first of all, there's about 20 million collisions each second. So you don't really have time to sit there with pen and paper or to look at each event. You have to very quickly make decisions about, is this an interesting event or not, and then throw it out or write it out to disk and analyze it later. So that's a lot of the challenge of doing these experiments. So in total, we write out about 400 events per second. So that means we've collected many, many terabytes of data that are stored all over the world. And then we slowly sift through that data using thousands of computers, again, all over the world, to try to understand best as possible, was there, say, a Higgs boson lying somewhere in those events?
Okay, sounds great. I understand we actually have some clips and some photos of maybe the underground entire ring at the LHC and two main detectors, ATLAS and CMS. So maybe if we could pull some of those up now.
Yeah, they're very big experiments. So like we said, the LHC itself is 27 miles round. Each of the experiments is over 6 stories tall, so you can usually see we always put a person on each of the pictures so that you can see a sense of scale. But these detectors are very large and very complex and need to be in order to do their job. So they are impressive machines. They each cost many billions of dollars and take thousands of people and lots of graduate students working on them to put them together.
Okay, so that's the ATLAS one there, and I think we also have the CMS as well. So.
Here's a cutaway of the ATLAS detector so you can see the different pieces. At the center, you have a tracking chamber which reconstructs the charged particles that are coming out. And then outside of that, what are called calorimeters that are really absorb most of the energy from the events and can reconstruct, for instance, the photons that we'll be talking about later. And then outside of that, most of the volume of these experiments is taken up by the muon chambers. And the muons, which is a heavier cousin of the electron that most people know about, since it's heavier, it goes through almost everything. There's one going through you almost every second. And these muons can go straight through most of the detector, but they're recorded in these muon chambers, which are these blue things on the outside.
Okay, fantastic. That's great. So that's the actual experiment where the announcement was this morning. And I know a lot of the people involved are theoretical physicists. And I'll tell you, as a theoretical particle physicist, what is the Higgs boson and what's kind of the context to that? What are people looking for at the LHC?
Yeah, so let me back up a little bit, back out from that and actually take a look at this glass of water here. This water we know is made up of atoms, and most of you know that inside of every one of those atoms, it's made up of electrons, protons, and neutrons. Now, the electron, as far as we know, is fundamental. isn't built out of smaller particles. But if you look very closely at what's inside of those protons and neutrons, we found that they're actually built out of constituent particles called quarks. These quarks, like the electron, as far as we know, they aren't built out of anything smaller. They're fundamental particles, at least up to length scales of 1,000th their size we can explore. They don't seem to be made out of smaller constituents. So in studying these building blocks, the electron, the quarks, and other particles like them, these are some of the matter that makes up what we call the Standard Model, the theory of all the particles that we know exist in nature. They interact through three forces: the electromagnetic forces you're familiar with, strong forces which bind the quarks inside the proton, and the weak forces. Now, it's the weak forces that I want to focus on. The weak forces, every force has associated with it a particle. The particle associated with electromagnetism is light. Particles associated with the weak forces are called the W and Z particles. And these are actually massive. They weigh about 100 times as much as a proton. Now, that may seem like a perfectly straightforward fact at first glance, but it turns out that when one tries to do calculations in the theory, it poses a problem, unless you add some missing ingredient. So there has to be some missing link to make a theory with massive W and Z particles consistent. That link is what we call the Higgs mechanism. The Higgs particle is simply the manifestation of the simplest possible version of this kind of theory. So it's something that we know has to be there just to make the forces that we've already measured and studied consistent.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. And so the Higgs boson, I understand, is one part of what physicists call the Standard Model, kind of the framework of a theory we've been working on for the last kind of sort of 40 years or so. Is there anything more you wanted to add about, I mean, what is the Standard Model, Philip?
Well, I think Natalia summarized what the Standard Model is quite well. And I think when we talk about the Higgs mechanism, what we're mainly talking about is the mechanism that gives mass to these W mm-hmm. and Z bosons. Yeah. Now, that's actually very important. The fact that the W and Z bosons that mediate the weak interactions, mm-hmm. the fact that they have a mass, really affects a number of properties in the world. So weak interactions are responsible for radioactive yeah. decay, and they're responsible also for controlling chains of nuclear reactions in the sun. So the very fact that we have a sun that burns for a very long time is related to the fact that the weak interactions are so weak. Part of the source of the heat in the interior of the Earth comes from radioactive decays. That's made possible by very weak interactions. Okay. Now, in addition to the Higgs mechanism giving mass to the W and the Z bosons, the weak interactions, it's thought, given what we know about all the other matter in the universe that Natalia alluded to, it's thought that the Higgs mechanism also gives mass to all the fundamental particles, like the electron, like the muon, and the quarks. That also is an extremely important fact. For example, the fact that we have atoms is intrinsically tied to the fact that the electron has a finite mass. The size of atoms is determined by the Bohr radius, is determined in part by this electron mass, and that mass is derived from the Higgs mechanism. So it's really actually crucially important to understand what this mechanism is, whether it exists, and Andy will speak to that in a second, and then we need to understand how it works in detail.
Okay, great. So back to you, Andy. So there's a lot of hype about today, a lot of excitement. I believe Higgs was one of the top trending topics on Twitter even. How big a day is it? How exciting is it, and big a day for scientists?
We just heard from Philip, if it wasn't for us, we wouldn't have atoms, so yeah. that's a big deal. No, I mean, look, we've been looking for this particle on and off for the past 40 or 50 years. Mm-hmm. So it's really the holy grail of particle physics to find the Higgs boson, and the fact that we may have done it is just very exciting. So we're all crossing our fingers that this really is the Higgs boson. We've had hints of it before, and they've gone away. But this is the best hint we've had so far, and the fact that we're here talking about it means that people are really excited that this may really be the Higgs boson.
Okay, and what was that hint? So what was announced today?
So we heard talks this morning at 2 o'clock CERN time in Geneva and 8 o'clock here in the morning, from each of the two leaders of the main experiments, ATLAS and CMS. And they announced the latest results on all of the searches for the Higgs boson at each of their experiments using the data that's been taken this year, 2011, which is about 5 inverse femtobarns of data. It's a unit that doesn't mean anything to most people. But it's a lot of data. It's a lot of events, trillions and trillions of events. The accelerators worked very well in order to produce that much data so that we have enough statistical power to be able to actually possibly see the Higgs boson. So we heard these talks where they announced the results, and as we'll see in some plots we may take a look at, for instance, if we look at the invariant mass that gets reconstructed of diphotons, this is one of the best places to see a hint of the Higgs boson. So maybe we can actually take a look at...
Yeah, so maybe if we bring up, I believe it's plot 4.
Yeah. So here we have what we call the invariant mass. So these are events that each have...
So what is the invariant mass?
Exactly. So so first of all, these events each have 2 very high energy photons in them. Each of these photons has an energy of about 50 giga electron volts, or about 1,000,000 times the energy of an X-ray that you would get at the dentist or something. But they're really just photons of light. And we can see these 2 photons. We also have event displays that we can show later. And the invariant mass is... if there was a particle there at 125 GeV, let's just say a random number, and it decayed to 2 photons, then we would see a little bump in this plot at that mass of 125 GeV. And so what we would want to look for as a sign of the Higgs boson in this plot is a little excess of events at a particular mass, mm-hmm. whereas the rest of the events would follow some smooth curve just given by backgrounds that are made from lots of other processes that can occur in the standard model that these two could tell you about even better than I could. And so what gets people excited is that if you squint hard enough, you can see a little bump in this plot around 125 GeV. There's 3 points there that are above the red line consistently, and maybe a hint of the Higgs boson. Not only this plot, but also a similar plot from CMS shows a similar excess of events, and then also looking at decays to 2 Z bosons, mm-hmm. We also see evidence both from ATLAS and CMS for possibly an excess at that same exact mass. So here we have the plot of the invariant mass reconstructed from the Z boson. So again, if we look at 125 GeV here, this is from CMS, we see 2 events near 125 GeV. With not too much background. So again, these 2 events are a hint that that could be right. A Higgs boson there.
Okay, so what you're saying, I mean, you talked earlier on about this experiment kind of smashing 2 protons together, a lot of energy produced in that, and in the kind of the debris, one of the particles produced is maybe a Higgs boson, and that Higgs boson would decay into 2 photons, and then we detect those, and then what we're kind of seeing is the detections of those photons in those 2 plots we just saw.
That's right. So out of the trillions of events that happened, there mm-hmm. were some tens of thousands that had 2 very high energy photons in them. And we can look at the reconstructed mass of the particle that had decayed to create those 2 photons.
Okay. Right. There was, I know, one other plot, I believe that's plot 3, that ATLAS put up as well. And if you go to their homepage, their main page, they have that plot up there on the front page. So can you walk us through that?
Sure. So what this is, if you take the histograms like we just looked at of the actual events themselves as a function of mass, and then do some statistical machinery, this then adds all of those analyses together from all the different channels, so from the Higgs decaying to photons or the Higgs decaying to Z bosons mm-hmm. and all the other different things it can decay to. If you add them all together, now this shows as a function of mass how well the data agrees with your expected, what you would have expected to see had a Higgs boson not been there. Okay. So the dotted line in the middle of the green band is what you would have expected to see if there was no Higgs boson. And then you see, you would expect this observed line, which is the solid curve with the little dots in it, you would expect that to wiggle up and down randomly from statistical fluctuations. The size of the fluctuations you would expect is given by the green and the yellow band. So that's the one sigma and the two sigma band of the statistical fluctuations you'd expect. Now, when you see the solid line start to get outside that two sigma band, that means that there was a rather significant deviation from these random fluctuations that you might expect. And so at 125 GV, this is showing us that we do have what we call a 2.3 sigma fluctuation that cannot be explained just by the background itself. So 2.3 sigma.
Okay. So I'm looking at the hill in the middle, the center one, the biggest one, and that's a pretty significant deviation from what you would expect if there was no Higgs. And you did mention, what's a sigma?
Okay, so 2.3 sigma means that you would expect that to happen by random chance less than 5% of the time. Once you get up to 3 sigma, you expect that to happen less than even 1% of the time.
Right.
So sigma just quantifies how often you would expect to happen, something like that to happen by random chance. So I like to use this example of, let's say you're getting on a bus and you notice that the bus is really crowded. Now maybe there's a football game going on, or I guess hockey here, down the street, and everybody is getting on the bus to get to the hockey game. But it's also possible that just everyone's schedules aligned randomly and everyone decided to take that bus at the same time. And so that can happen randomly. You'll get random fluctuations of how crowded a bus is up and down. But if you notice that the bus is really crowded by 3 sigma, that means that you're 99% sure that there really is a hockey game going on somewhere else.
Okay, great. So Natalia, so you saw these results being presented just a number of hours ago at CERN. What do they mean to you? What were you kind of thinking and feeling when you...
Well, I think we're all, especially those of us who are seeing the data from both experiments for the very first time today, are really trying to piece together and ask questions like, how consistent are the results from the two experiments and from the different measurements that each experiment did? It's only been a few hours since we first saw these results, and so we're still really just trying to process the details, trying to internalize them. But, for example, we look at this, first plot that Andy showed, the decay to two photons. That rate for this simplest theory, the standard model Higgs theory, should be related in a very particular way to the rate in the second plot, the decay to two Z bosons. Those are telling you, really, those are connected to different properties of the Higgs particle. The two photon decay, that's related to how much it couples to matter. And the two Z boson decay, that's really about the fact that it breaks electroweak symmetry, the fact that it gives the W and the Z bosons a mass. And so the second thing that we can't really do right now with this much data is getting a sense of whether those numbers are consistent with our expectations for the standard model Higgs. Getting a sense for whether they line up with just having one particle that does all of this work. So in a sense, this is, I guess, the beginning of the end of the beginning. We're waiting to see more data, a real confirmation that there is a Higgs boson that all the experiments are seeing, that it's not just a lot of people who got on the two-photon bus at the same time. And at the same time, we're also trying to look into this and really get a cleaner picture from the data of what is, if this is real, if it really is a Higgs boson, what is its structure?
Okay, great. And Philip, you're...
Yeah, I think these results are very promising. I mean, certainly there's, fluctuations do come and go. Even very rare fluctuations do come and go. I think one of the things that was a bit probably surprising to quite a few people is that at least both CMS and ATLAS see similar types of events in excess in similar places. It's not totally conclusive. I think very clearly we're going to need more data to really be sure that this is a new particle. But from the standpoint of a theorist trying to interpret what this data might mean, I also think it's very promising that this excess of events showed up in a final state that involves two Z bosons. That is indicative of a new particle that is playing a role in electroweak symmetry breaking. It's also important that it showed up in corroborating channels like the two-photon channel, so a Higgs decaying to two photons. I think that, and the same invariant mass point in these plots. So I think it's very tantalizing.
Okay, great, great.
Part of what made this so exciting was that for the last month or so, both ATLAS and CMS independently knew that they had some excess of events. But we didn't necessarily know how big the other experiment's excess was and at what mass it was. Yeah. And so it wasn't literally until this morning when the leaders of the experiments were giving their talks that we got to see each other's cards, so to speak, and see that actually the two excesses lined up at the same mass. So that was very encouraging.
Yeah, absolutely. So just on that, I mean, there's one overall experiment, the LHC, but today there were two presentations, one from ATLAS, you're a member of that, and one from CMS. Why the two different experiments?
So it's always the first rule of government funding that you always, you know, if given the chance, you build two for twice the price, you know. But seriously, the motivation is that they wouldn't necessarily believe ATLAS if I came up here and presented a three sigma result. But the fact that there is this other experiment, which is a completely independent group of people with their own software and their own detector, mm-hmm. Literally working independently, also coming up with very similar results, that makes the whole thing believable. It's a fundamental thing in science that you never trust something until the experiment is repeated. And so that's the goal here.
Okay, so looking at these plots like the one we have on now, how excited should I get about them? How much would you bet on there being a Higgs boson based on what we've seen today?
Well, Mitt Romney just got in trouble for making a bet, so I'm not in the business of betting. I think that was Rick Perry's answer, but I'm 2.3 sigma confident that that this will stand. And what is also encouraging and a reason we might think that this is going to stick around is that the standard model Higgs boson, at least, is running out of room to hide. Mm-hmm. So we now know that it has to be heavier than 115 GeV. We've known that since about 2000 or so when the LEP experiments were running. And we now know that it has to be lighter than 127 mm-hmm. GeV.
Yeah.
So the fact that it's possibly at 125 GeV is a pretty good chance.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. So what, Philip, I mean, where to from here in terms of, I guess, both theoreticians and experimentalists involved in the LHC?
Well, I think the first thing, certainly fluctuations, evidence at the level of 2 sigma has come and gone in the past. There are reasons to think that this is different, and this does look very promising and tantalizing. So the very first thing will be to collect more data that can corroborate directly this result. And I think that'll happen early in 2012. And then as more data is taken, more sophisticated questions can be asked about this excess of events if it really holds up. So for example, if is the excess that we're seeing, is it really a Higgs particle? Or is it some other kind of particle? Now, admittedly, all of these searches are designed to look for just the Higgs particle, but you know, you have to actually demonstrate that in the data. So one thing to watch out for are not just searches for the Higgs particle, but searches that try to look at different kinds of decay modes, decay properties of the Higgs particle. So 2Z bosons, this was mentioned, decays into 2W bosons. So these are the two force carriers of the weak interactions. So you want to actually see that the Higgs that's supposed to help give mass to these particles decays into them. So, and you want to see that it does so in a way that's consistent with how a Higgs mechanism would work. So that we're going to want to see measurements of that in 2012. And I think the expectation is that there'll be anywhere from 4 to 5 times the amount of data that that they currently have, and so those measurements should become possible. So I think that's what we want to watch out for now, is going forward, is trying to actually piece together and understand this excess from a few different points of view.
Okay, so by the end of next year, we maybe could expect, if things go well, a definitive?
Well, yeah, I mean, so I don't want to, one shouldn't, I don't want to promise something that's not guaranteed to happen, but if this is the Higgs, and anywhere from 20 to 30 inverse femtobarns is taken, I think the broad expectation is that you'll see the significance of this deviation climb above the 5 sigma mark. So 5 sigma is like the confidence level that's taken as a gold standard in this field. And I think at the same time, we'll learn enough from these different final states, two of which are the photon-photon and the 2Z final state, that we'll be able to start making statements about that relate to, is this a standard model Higgs? Is it a Higgs, but a little bit different than what we expect? And I think from a theory point of view, from the point of view of somebody who's trying to understand beyond the standard model physics, that will become a very important question. Because depending on where the standard model comes from, depending on what the underlying theory is at higher energies, those different underlying theories can make very different predictions for the detailed properties of the Higgs. So now we want to turn the Higgs into a tool for studying even higher energy phenomenon. I think that'll be the direction to go.
Okay, great. And Natalia, I know the LHC is looking for a number of things, and Philip talked about what implications of this result might be for the standard model and beyond. In terms of how does this kind of result relate to the other things that the LHC might or might not find?
Well, it's a complicated set of relationships, just because there are hints that one can read both ways. But I think something that I would definitely say is having a relatively light Higgs boson is something that has caused theorists a lot of head scratching, a lot of pondering, even from the time it was proposed. If there is a Higgs particle with a low mass that seems to behave like a fundamental particle, and one asks, what are the quantum corrections to its mass? So again, this is a technical question, but one that we can ask in a very well-tested theoretical framework. How do quantum mechanical effects change the mass of a Higgs boson? You calculate this thing, and you get a number that's naively 32 orders of magnitude, one with 32 zeros after it, bigger than the mass of the Higgs. So you have to somehow explain why it's not that big, why it's really much smaller. Theories that you may have heard named, things like technicolor supersymmetry, these have all been invoked to explain that big separation of scales, the smallness of the Higgs mass, the W mass, compared to what we might have naively expected. At the same time, this particular mass that the data seems to be hinting at is hard to obtain, at least in the most minimal versions of, say, supersymmetric theories, certainly in minimal versions of technicolor. So it hints that there should be more kinds of physics beyond the standard model, new things to explore. But at least from my reading of this, and I think this is still very subjective and subject to individual opinions and biases right now, my reading of it is that it hints that whatever is explaining the smallness of the Higgs mass, the smallness of the weak interaction scale, is really a lot more complicated than the simplest theories that we wrote down. Which means that if that's true, we're in for a long, difficult and really exciting search, because we'll learn a lot from it, whatever's turned up in the end. That could be a decade-long venture.
Okay, fantastic. On that note, we have a number of questions from people online, so we might take the first one of those.
Sure, so we have Tom R., and he wants to know, what is this 125 GV? Is that predicted by the nature of the Higgs?
I think that's more for the theorist, since it had the word predicted in it.
No, so, well, do you want to?
Well, there's a reason that all of these graphs that we show have a wide range of Higgs masses. The short answer is no, it's not predicted. The graphs have a wide range because we want to look for a Higgs boson in all the places it could be, and really didn't have any idea. I mean, after LEP and the Tevatron experiments, we had some idea that it should be above 115 GeV not in a little region around 145, and probably lower than several hundred. But, you know, that whole range was there to be explored. 125, the reason we've been focusing on that number, is just that it's a number that keeps coming up in quite a few of the most sensitive experimental searches that Atlas and CMS performed.
Okay, I think we have another question, maybe.
We do. It's from Robert Paulson, and he wants to know, how do the present findings differ from earlier findings by Fermilab?
So it's interesting. Fermilab, I worked, as he said, on the D0 experiment at Fermilab for many years, and we were looking for the Higgs boson and still are looking for the Higgs boson very hard there. And Fermilab also has an excess of events in that region at 125 GeV over a very broad range from 120 to 140 even. So I'd say the Fermilab results are consistent with what the LHC is seeing now, although unfortunately Fermilab has less statistical sensitivity to the Higgs boson at this point. But they will be releasing new results for the Morion conference, which is in March next year. And hopefully they will have a little more sensitivity with the latest data that they've analyzed up to that point.
Great. We have another question from Balado, and she wants to know, Higgs bosons interact with each other. Does the Higgs have a mass itself?
Well,
Philip.
The Higgs, this depends on the variety of Higgs theory that you're working with. But in the minimal Higgs scenario, there's actually one Higgs particle. This mass term that was alluded to earlier, there was a question, is the mass sort of predicted? This is, within the standard model, that mass is a free parameter, or it can be taken as a free parameter. But yes, it does have a mass, so in that sense, it does have a self-interaction.
So I understand that a lot of theoretical physicists are working on models beyond the standard model, model building. Does the discovery of the Higgs eliminate some of these beyond the standard models?
Natalia.
Right now, it eliminates patches of these models. I would say most models are not. There are variations of the models that survive up to now. Certainly disfavors models like Technicolor, where the Higgs is really thought to be a sort of a big fluffy composite object with strong couplings. Well, this a Higgs at 125 GeV mass, in order to give just the mass to the W and the Z that it does, should have relatively weak couplings. So it doesn't look like Technicolor. But it could still be a composite particle with other properties. So there are corners of each theory that still need to be explored in other ways.
We have a comment from Ivan Bakley, and he wants to know, what are you going to do if this is not the Higgs particle, if it isn't found? Each of you, what are you going to do?
Well, I think that would be great news if it turned out that there was some deviation from what you would have expected were this the Higgs boson, then we'd have a whole new set of information to try to understand what is this new effect that we're seeing and what could be causing it. So that would be extremely interesting.
Yeah, it's worth remembering this whole exploration here is a very important part of this. It would be fantastic if this turns out to be something totally unexpected. I think all of us agree with that. So of course, if there is some unexpected new phenomenon that we hadn't been thinking about, as theorists, we'll work on trying to extend the standard model to incorporate it, and our experimental colleagues will try to understand it directly by making it in the lab.
I think one of the exciting things about the Higgs boson is that it can act as kind of a portal to any physics beyond the standard model. So a lot of theories of physics beyond the standard model would predict at least a 10% deviation in terms of the standard model Higgs properties. So by measuring things very carefully in the next coming 5 to 10 years, we can really pin down whether this is exactly the standard model Higgs boson, which could then really lead to a new discovery if you find even a 5% deviation from what you would expect.
Yeah, well, maybe I should step in and be the pessimist here, because you guys have both answered, what if it isn't the Higgs particle, but it is some other new fantastic particle to understand? And of course, there is another possibility, which is that it's not the Higgs particle, it's just a bunch of events that randomly lined up on the same bus, Sandy was saying earlier, right? And in that case, we just move on and press the question, then, is there a Higgs particle? Where is it? How do we find it? That'll also be an ongoing and very interesting search. Actually, if we look at the figure number 8 very quickly, just for a little dramatization of this, you know, of what a little mini version of what we're talking about now. If you look and ask, what's the most significant thing on this plot? Your eye would not actually be drawn to 125 GeV, just looking along the horizontal direction. The place with the most surprising number of events is right around 119, where there's 3 lined up pretty much right on top of each other. Okay, so this, if this were the only figure that we had had, if this were the only search that would be that had been done, we would all be very cautiously excited about 119 GeV Higgs. And then we look later on at the ATLAS plots, at the other plots from other analyses in CMS. None of them show anything at 119, and we start doubting. So these are all about, this is all about degree of confidence with different things lining up, any of which could by itself just be an accident. And our degree of confidence is high about this 125 number, but, you know, but it's not infinite. And that's part of the reason we need to, probably the first reason that we need to keep measuring, understand this better.
So just to add an optimistic spin on your pessimism, if it turns out that this is a fluctuation and does go away, then with the data next year, we'll be able to exclude a standard model Higgs boson over this full range down to 115 GeV. And if we don't find the Higgs boson then we'll find something even more exciting, which is that the standard model Higgs boson doesn't exist. And so that would be even better. Yeah. So either way, we win.
We sort of have guaranteed returns next year.
So. So I believe we have another question.
So I'm just wondering, we can expect an answer by the end of next year or next summer? And and will we hear about it right away?
So assuming that the LHC continues to work well and can make the improvements that they think they can make next year, which is an if, but a reasonable assumption, and assuming that the experiments continue to work well, and assuming that this is not just a fluctuation, but it's really the Higgs boson, then we will be able to have a 5 sigma, or this golden level of significance that we expect, so 1 in a million uncertainty on whether the Higgs boson is really there. And also, we would be able to say that the Higgs boson definitely does not exist at all with a smaller level of certainty, so maybe a 2 or 3 sigma level of uncertainty if this excess of events doesn't persist.
And I think it's worth underscoring, the Higgs mechanism has been around, or it's been discussed in the physics community for over 4 decades. It is absolutely outstanding that you know, now we finally get some resolution to this question that's been out there for quite a while. So one way or another.
Fantastic. On that note of resolution, we're out of time. So thank you very much for listening in and participating in this session, this webcast, What the Higgs is Going On. Thank you to our panelists, Philip, Natalia, and Andy, and thank you very much. This, I know, will be online soon afterwards, and I guess we'll all wait and look forward to further news from the LHC on the Higgs boson.